Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
And in this part of the programme, we're continuing our coverage in the build-up to this year's House of Keys general election by speaking to another of the candidates to put the name forward. Today's election 2016 candidate interview is with 63-year-old Nigel Dobson, who's announced he'll be standing in the now two-seat constituency of Garth. Good afternoon, Nigel. Welcome to the programme.
Hi, Stu.
Not your first rodeo, this. You've had a go at national politics before, haven't you?
Yeah, a couple of times.
And I think last time, am I right in saying that you were standing as part of the Lib Van party?
I was indeed.
Did you decide that party politics isn't the way forward? Because you're not this time, are you?
No, I'm not this time. I still believe in party politics. That hasn't changed. I think when I first joined Lib Van as a founder member 10 years ago, it was a very broad church. There's still a lot of their policies that I believe in and I like, but I think the church has narrowed a little bit. And I'm perhaps just a little bit too much to the right for the Lib Van party of today.
Okay, so proudly independent this time. No stranger to certainly local authority politics, mm-hmm. because you've been a member now for going on a decade. What makes you want to take that step up from local authority stuff to national government?
I think it's something I've had an interest in for, as we just said, for some considerable time. It's my third time of standing. I think I have something to offer. I have a strong business acumen. I'm heavily involved in the community in which I live. I moved to the island back in December of 1997. The island's been very good to me. It'd be nice for me to try and contribute back to the island.
Okay. Well, tell us a bit about yourself then, because not everybody will recognise your name. I think your business is catering, isn't it?
Yes.
You're involved in catering at various locations around the island. Yeah. What else? Tell us about your family and all the rest of it.
Well, I was born in the city of Leicester. I'm a proud fan of Leicester City Football Club, so I've had a very good 12 months. I'm married to Marilyn. We've been married for 20 years now. I have two children from a previous marriage, one who lives in the Wirral, the other who lives in Hanoi in Vietnam.
Thank heavens for Skype.
Absolutely, yeah. I set up my business back in 2001 and have grown from there.
Okay. Now, let's have a look at some of your thoughts and policies and manifesto points. You say that the ageing population is one of the challenges facing the island. That's probably not unique to the Isle of Man, but how should the island adapt to accommodate and deal with that change in demographic?
I think what we've got to try and do is encourage more of our younger people to return to the island after their education. We can do that in a number of ways. We need to look at the housing situation. It's very expensive to get onto the housing ladder here as compared to the northern part of England, where many of them study. I quite like Alan Bell's article in the paper yesterday about returning grants to returning students and that kind of thing. I think we also need to look at the social side for them, because we live in a very safe, very secure island. But over the years, it's almost become a middle-aged island, if you know what I mean. And people don't want to live here just to work. They want to live here to work, to have families and to socialise.
Isn't it always going to be the case, though, with young people, that especially if they've been away for 3 years at university, they've seen the big the big cities and the bright lights and things like that, and probably want to enjoy that for a few more years. And the island's got very little to offer, and probably never would have much to offer compared to Manchester, Liverpool, London or wherever, has it?
I wouldn't disagree with that, and I'm not saying that we should necessarily say, students, please come back when you're 21. Yeah. We're just as interested in having you back when you're 25, 30, 35.
Is that more likely, do you think, that we can encourage it once they start thinking about having a family, for example? Is that the time to grab these people and say, think about what you're doing, because look at the benefits of bringing your children up at home?
Absolutely, I think it is. I think the Isle of Man is a wonderful place to bring up children. It's safe, it's secure. We have a tremendous sporting history, a good outdoor life. And yes, that's certainly something that we should try and encourage.
What are the big threats and what are the, if any, big opportunities facing the island over the next 5 years?
Well, the big threat is that we still haven't sorted out the structural deficit. And that needs to be addressed in whatever manner is necessary. Opportunities, I think we need to attract new industry, but we need to attract new people. One of the difficulties we have on the island at the moment, we have a wonderful situation of, I think it's 1.6% unemployment. But at 1.6% unemployment, we're lacking the key ingredient for business to expand, which is personnel. We need to look at the work permit situation.
And relax it?
Very much so. I'll give you a personal example. We refurbished the Liverpool Arms a few months ago, and I was looking for a couple of full-time bar staff. Put in the adverts, I had a couple of very able candidates, one who'd moved over to live with his girlfriend. He was in his late 20s, experienced, couldn't get him a work permit. I still have one of those vacancies empty.
Because you can't actually employ somebody.
Can't get anybody.
So there are people available, but you can't employ them because they need a work permit. Yeah. But, I mean, isn't the whole work permit system predicated on the need to protect Manx workers? So, you know, were there not Manx workers that you could have employed instead? Or do you think that it should be based on merit that you want the best person for the job?
I think a combination of both. One of the things I don't like about the Manx, the work permit system, is that it states that you have to employ somebody who's able, not somebody who's capable.
Yes.
There's a slight difference there. But again, in this particular situation, I didn't have any Manx workers apply.
Right. That's interesting, isn't it? You say that a priority would be the economy. What sort of measures would you like to see brought in to help grow the economy? What have we got here that would encourage Dyson to bring a vacuum cleaner factory here or whatever it might be? Or are all our new businesses going to be based on things like IT and intellectual property?
I think, again, with the unemployment situation that it currently is, to grow the economy, we need to look at areas that don't require substantial numbers of people until we get those people over. I think the other thing we need to do to grow the economy is have a look at this fallacy of the 4% growth that we have. Yes, we have 4% growth as a nation. Some areas are growing by 8, 9, 10, 12, 14%. So if we've got a 4% overall figure, that means some areas must be suffering.
Yeah.
And I think we need to do more work on discovering which areas are suffering and try and encourage those to get out of the suffering for to grow organically.
You say that the books need to be balanced. Yeah. So we need to make more money, we need to save more money. Where do you think the big areas are? People have been talking to me over the last few weeks about the public sector pension deficit. Do you think the government's done enough to try and address that situation?
I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on it. Certainly they've started. I'm sure there's more to do. The advantage, if you'd like, is that it is a long-term problem. It has to be planned and dealt with in probably the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that more will need to be done.
Well, various people say that the reserves are going to run out over the next 5 years. So
that's a figure I've heard. It's a figure I've heard, which is a concern. And we have to spend more smartly in a lot of ways, and we have to make better choices, I think.
Do you think that many MHKs at the moment are living in the bad old days, or the good old days, when there was plenty of money around and they could spend the ways out of problems?
Absolutely. It's a whipping horse this time round, I know, and I've worked with Phil Gorn on a number of occasions, but the way he explained spending the money on the slop was just old-fashioned thinking. I've got 500,000, I must spend it, because if I don't spend it, I won't have it next year. That's not the way we should be doing things.
Well, I went up the Coast Road yesterday, first time for months, and I must say that the road up past the Liverpool Arms there, your premises, been resurfaced. I never thought that road was in a particularly bad condition, but you'll know better.
I didn't think it was in a particularly bad condition, and again, joined up thinking. They closed the road for 2 weeks in the middle of summer. Which certainly didn't help me personally. But I didn't think it was the worst road on the Isle of Man.
Okay. You're a businessman. You've got an interest in all sorts of different establishments, as we say. If you're elected as an MHK, would that all take a back seat, or would you get out of business completely and concentrate on being a full-time politician?
Certainly, if I get elected, I would be a full-time politician. I'm very fortunate in I have good managerial staff within my company. I mean, the sound which I operate, I probably go down once a week to say hello. And if they've got a problem, they ring me up and it's a 5-minute phone call. So, strange as it may sound, my duties aren't arduous at the moment.
Okay. Well, that's a sign of good management, isn't it?
Hopefully,
if you can delegate properly.
Yeah.
You say that another priority would be the health service. Where are the issues as you see them in the health service?
I think with the health service, there are a number of issues. First of all, we have to decide how we want to spend our money. I'll give you an example. We have on the island one of the most modern fleet of buses anywhere in Europe. We have a hugely extensive network, which any rural area of Britain would be incredibly proud of. and we have a 13-month waiting list to get in to see the acute pain clinic. Now, somebody's made that decision.
Yeah,
somebody
said,
we're going to spend the money on that, we're not going to spend it on that. But there's also some structural difficulties. For instance, there's a moratorium on hiring new staff at the hospital in administration. I understand the reasoning for that, but there have to be exceptions. If you have a secretary to a consultant who's a temp, who's costing you more than a member of staff would do, she's coming into a language that she's never had before because the medical language is very specialised, using lots of terms that you and I wouldn't have a clue what they are. 6 months down the line, she's got a grip of it and she's now become an efficient medical secretary. 12 months down the line, she has to leave because she's a temp, yeah. And you bring another one in and teach them for 6 months. And I was talking to one secretary recently, and she said to me she spends so much time answering the phone, she doesn't have time to type out the appointment letters.
So it's a case of working smarter rather than harder.
Absolutely.
And do you think that that's true of lots of areas of government? I mean, for example, how much influence do you think the civil servants have? Because I wonder about, you know, you're standing to be an MHK, and you're full of ideas and things. I wonder how many of those you'd be able to see through, how many things you would be able to influence if you were in there, because people tell me, well, the island's run by the civil servants, really. The politicians are just the icing on the cake.
I think there's some truth in that. I think one of the things I totally accept, having been involved in local government for 9 years and been on various committees at a national level, is it's frustrating how slow government works. So I'm not expecting to go in there and on day two, hey, there's a bright light going, and you've got to be realistic about it. But I think you also have to have the strength. If I'm a departmental member or at some later stage a minister or whatever, yes, I must listen to my civil servants. Yes, I must take advice from my civil servants. They're the professionals. That's what they're paid to do. But if I think they're wrong, I've got to be able to say, hang on, no, we're not going to do that. Look at this for me. I prefer to go in this direction. And we are there to lead our civil servants. Our civil servants are there to aid us.
Yeah, all right. So, I mean, back to your thing about the buses and the nurses, for example. Whose fault is that? Is that down to the Council of Ministers? One presumes that the decisions were taken at that sort of level about where they were going to spend the money. So, or is it just the back to the silo mentality thing where each department's fighting its own corner and people forget national objectives in the noise around each department's thinking?
I think you're right. I mean, with the health service, you're never going to give it enough money. You know, that simply can't happen. It will eat up it. But you need to look at how you're spending and spend it smartly. With the transport system, yes, we need, we're a rural community, we do need a good transport system. But could we make the buses last another year or two? Was there a strong economic argument for replacing them so soon? I don't know.
All right. You say that some tough decisions have been ducked. Which ones, do you think?
Oh, there's a good question. I'd forgotten I'd said that.
I guess you're talking about things like the promenade scheme and things like that.
The promenade, certainly. The promenade is ludicrous. We've spent £1 million or thereabouts on consultations, and we still haven't got a final planning application in. I heard somebody else on the radio earlier on today saying that perhaps it wasn't as important, we should do it. It's the gateway to the island. That road hasn't been reconstructed since before the Second World War.
Yeah.
I've spent my life in catering or sales, and the first thing that we were taught when I was, you know, a nipper was first impressions count.
Yeah.
You get off that boat and you bump and you rump, and that's not a good impression. Let's make it as... Again, it's... With the promenade, there have been three schemes so far.
Yes.
Each time a scheme has come out, somebody's objected to it. Every scheme you put out, somebody will object to it. Sooner or later, as I was saying with the civil servants, you've got to make a stand and say, well, look, I know you don't like this, but lots of people do. Let's get on with it.
And do you think that politicians at the moment are bad at that, are bad at saying to people, listen, we know you object to it, but I'm sorry, we're going to do it because more people think it's a good idea than a bad one?
I think they consult too much. This is where, again, I personally would prefer a party political system. If there was a left party, a centrist party like Lib Van, yeah. and maybe a right of centre, which is where I think I would fit in, then you get more cohesion there. But I think at the moment, politicians have to go out to consultation to some extent because they haven't actually got a mandate from the island.
Right.
They've got a mandate from their patch, and they're afraid to make a decision if they're not getting everybody to agree. Excuse me.
You say that your priority on a local level would be to engage with constituents throughout your term of office, mm-hmm. not just elections. Do you think that current politicians are a bit too detached, that they only actually talk to people every 5 years?
I think it varies, if the truth be known. I know that some of our existing MHDKs do hold regular surgeries. Some don't. I would like to think I'd be one of those that did.
OK. I mean, how are you with things like social media and, in terms of keeping people advised about what you're doing and what you're thinking? Would you use things like that, or would it just be a surgery?
Very much so. I use Facebook quite a lot anyway in my day-to-day business. We advertise on Facebook, we communicate on Facebook. I'm not an expert on Twitter, if I'm honest.
No, I'm not, actually.
I'd probably have to take some lessons on that. But yes, I'm technically reasonably savvy.
Okay. Now, strangely, you're actually going to be off Ireland for the election day itself. That might give people the impression that you're not taking it seriously. What's so important that you've got to be off Ireland on election day?
My mother's 81st birthday and my son's wedding.
Well,
on the same day.
It's as simple as that then, really.
My son lives in Hanoi, and when he first told me the date of the wedding, and I made a mistake here, the last election, about 5 years ago, election day was the last Thursday of September. I thought it would be the last Thursday of September this year.
Right.
But it's not to do with the last Thursday, it's to do with 60 days of the last Tin Wall sitting and so on and so forth.
Okay.
And so the 17th was set. My mother, like I said, she's 81 on the 17th. She lives in Scotland. She wants to travel to the wedding. I can't ask her to get on a flight and do 18 hours there, attend the wedding 18 hours back. She's got to have a break there. And the tradition in Vietnam is the wedding itself isn't particularly special. But then 2 or 3 days after the wedding, the families get together and bond and get to know each other as a family.
Okay.
And that's what they do there.
You can't really avoid that, I don't suppose.
I will make this very clear now. I'm not here for that 2 weeks. I am here for the following 4 years, 3 months and whatever weeks. But throughout that time, family will come first.
All right. Tell me about what your view is of the size of the public sector. A lot of people say to me, we've got far too many people employed by government in the Isle of Man. What's your view on that?
Absolutely, we have.
Where, though?
I think all over the place. You go into the civil service. I'm quite sure that could be smarter rather than harder. We've actually increased our workforce over the last 5 years when we were supposed to be trying to reduce it. And that's also taking away from the employment pool for the private sector.
OK, but you also run the risk of, if you have a slash and burn policy and get rid of an awful lot of people, you're going to end up with a huge bill as far as, dole payments are concerned, for example, and a lot of people out of work who possibly don't deserve to be out of work. So how do you manage to balance?
Well, first of all, I don't necessarily think it would be slash and burn. I think it's something that you would do over a period of 2 or 3 or 4 years. And as I say at the moment, I don't particularly think there would necessarily be a great dole payment issue. There is a shortage in the workplace.
Right.
Businesses are not expanding, my own included, because I can't get the staff.
And how would you decide which jobs were to stay and which jobs were to go? Surely this is something that you'd have to bring somebody from outside to look at, wouldn't you?
You'd have to have somebody who knows what they're doing, yes. I'm not one of these people who says that you never go to consultation on anything. But yes, it would make sense to have a business expert to come in and say, right, this department can be run more efficiently by doing so and so. Perhaps we don't need as many departments. Perhaps we need smaller government. There's a lot of duplication where one department has a CEO, another department has a... Do we need two CEOs?
Right.
Or can we make do with one? And yes, we would. I personally would need to take advice on that. But I've been in business. I'm aware that if my staff costs get too high, then my business struggles. If our public sector gets too high, we can only afford what we've got, and we haven't got as much as we used to have.
Yeah, that's very true. What do you think about politics generally in the Isle of Man? We've talked a little bit about party politics, and you say that you are naturally possibly a little bit right-wing about things. But what do you think about politics in the Isle of Man? Do you think that the system that we've got works, or do you go along with a lot of what Lord Lisvain said?
I agree with some of what Lord Lisvain said. I'm not in favour of an island-wide election for the Chief Minister. The reason for that being that that almost becomes presidential insofar he's then sitting there and saying, well, I've got a mandate from the island, you've only got a mandate from a bit of the island. I don't think that's a good idea. And again, that's one of the advantages of party politics. If you had a party political system, then the leader of the biggest party would be able to reasonably say, well, I should be the chief minister.
Do you think that people who have aspirations to be chief minister should publish some sort of a manifesto that the public can at least see?
I absolutely do. I mean, full credit to my opponent in the past, Steve Roden, 10 years ago when I first stood against him. He announced in advance that he wanted to be chief minister, and I think he was the first one, certainly to my knowledge, to do so. John Shimon followed him a few days later.
And it backfired, though, didn't it?
Yeah, neither of them got the job.
Yeah, a lot of people thought, hang on a minute, this is a little bit presumptuous. We'll decide whether or not we want you to even be an MHK, never mind chief minister.
Well, I don't think it backfired for Steve. He won. I remember that because I lost.
I suppose so, yeah. There was an awful lot of talk about it at the time, though, and I think people felt uneasy, certainly in John Shimon's situation, and thought that, as I say, it was a little bit presumptuous. So that's the political system. What about LegCo? Do you think that LegCo still has a part in our tricameral system, or do you think the whole thing could be simplified in terms of making it faster? You say that politics takes an awful long time in the Isle of Man. Is that partly because of the system we've got?
Partly, but I think scrutiny is important. I think LegCo has a place, but I would like to see LegCo popularly elected. I don't like the idea that it's a retirement home for ex-MHKs.
Right. What are people saying to you on the doorstep? I'm guessing that you're out knocking and talking to people at the moment. What are the biggest concerns that people have got that you're talking to? And are there any things that have surprised you?
I think the biggest concern I've got, personally from my campaign, is the way that people of Onken feel disenfranchised. They don't like the fact that they're now in a new part of, or a new constituency. And it surprised me how strong that feeling is.
Is that just the other Manx resistance to change again, maybe?
Perhaps. And I would point out to them, I do live in Onken, so, give me a shout.
Okay. You say that it's going to take imagination and hard work to improve the lifestyle of people in the Isle of Man. Mm. What sort of imagination, what sort of ideas have you got that it's going to improve the Isle of Man over the next 5 years?
I don't think I've specifically got an individual idea. I think what you need to do is get out of the box. The best ideas are produced by what I call the fourth man. And that's when the three of you get together, you have a chat, and between the three of you, you come up with a spark, this, that and the other, and all of a sudden, there's an idea that the fourth man is going to... As an individual, I'm not going to solve the problems of the Isle of Man, but I will work with others to try and solve those problems.
Okay. And, do you think that if you're elected, you're going to be able to make a significant difference? Because, again, looking at it from the outside, you're full of ideas, you're full of thoughts about things that you want to see changed. Do you think you'll actually be able to achieve much of that?
I think, in honesty, I won't achieve as much as I want to achieve, but it won't be through a lack of effort. Because, again, government isn't going to change quickly. I think one little loophole that we have is we're losing a lot of experienced MHKs this time, which can be a disadvantage. We're keeping some, hopefully, MHKs with experience. But I think because there's going to be such a large block of new members, that if there's a way to change the way we do things rather than, well, this is the way it's always been done, this is actually an opportunity to do that.
Politics is a bit of a beauty contest, isn't it? How easy do you think it will be to keep people on side if you've got to make difficult decisions that the electorate might not be very happy with?
I don't think I should worry about that. I accept that if I'm elected because people like me and want me to be their MHK. I also accept a month later I'll be one of those up there on the gravy train. You've got to have a thick skin. But I also accept that if I have to make a difficult decision and I believe it's for the island's benefit, then it's my job to do so. And if I go to the electorate again in 5 years' time, should I be successful, the electorate can judge me on that.
Okay. We're running out of time now, but tell the people of Garth why they should vote for Nigel Dobson.
I've lived and worked in Onken and Lonan for the last 19 years. I've been heavily involved in the community. I'm I've forgotten the list of things that I'm on. You know, I've even been made an honorary vice president of the Eastern Young Farmers. It took me 62 years to get into the Eastern Young Farmers. I love the community I live in. I want to work hard for it.
Candidate for Garth, Nigel Dobson, thanks for joining us today.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.